Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Today we're going to be playing The Quest for El Dorado. It's designed by Reiner Knizia of Battleline, Modern Art, Raw, Samurai, and many, many more. The artist is Franz Valwinkel of Puerto Rico, Clank in Space, and San Juan. It's published by Ravensburger, and it was the 2017 Spiel des Jahres nominee. The description is, deep in the dense jungles of South America lies El Dorado, the city of gold. Unlimited treasure awaits in this lost kingdom, gold, jewels, and precious artifacts. You're a group of daring adventurers who embark on a search for the lost city. Slip into the role of brave expedition leaders and guide your team to El Dorado. Assemble a team of experts for your expedition, acquire valuable equipment, and plan your journey wisely. Whoever crosses the border into the Golden City first wins the game and claims all the treasure. The mechanics are card drafting, deck pool building, grid movement, hand management, and a modular board. And we have the box art in front of us. So based on all that, would you be interested in playing this game?
Yeah, it looks interesting. I think I would pick it up and read the back.
Meh.
Why meh? No.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, El Dorado. I don't know. Looking at the box, nothing's like, ooh, this looks fun, unique.
I think it's what I would expect for a game called The Quest for El Dorado.
Sure.
Without getting too, I don't know if racist is the word I want to go with, or stereotypical.
Mm-hmm. It's got an Indiana Jones vibe. It's kind of lost cities, which are always cool. So, and
I don't know if it would be so much the art that would make me pick it up, or the fact that it was Reiner Knizia.
Yeah, and I guess as a person who doesn't really follow names in the board game making world, like, apparently, maybe, who knows, maybe I'll...
This podcast, you're going to learn about mechanics, and you're going to learn about game design.
I was just going to say, too, how the mechanics mean nothing to me.
Yeah,
the artists I am kind of into, because I do have, I do like to collect art.
I think the art is a little bland, It's kind of just kind of static. It doesn't really evoke like a race or anything. It's just sort of like a jungle with a talisman on it. All right. So why don't you tell us a little about El Dorado?
So when Kiwi first told me this, I immediately went back to, of course, conquistadors. And not obviously, but I know, and all of us historians know, conquistadors, when they came to the Americas, right? I mean, they were just looking for gold, easy money, basically, as easy it could get. And once they were fed with these stories that, you know, beyond the next horizon or whatnot, there was, you know, some illustrious city, they just, you know, kept searching for this elusive city of gold, and therefore got to spread their germs a little bit extra.
Is El Dorado the same as the Fountain of Youth?
I mean, technically speaking, they were two different quests, because the Fountain of Youth is almost multicultural. You'll find that kind of mythological search in different continents, if you will, but... they do get conflated. So conquistadors are mid 16th century, really, when they're operating at their height. By the 17th century, you start to have the kind of Fountain of Youth and or El Dorado myths almost being conflated, that you could find both of them. But they are usually separate locations.
So a few hundred years ago, people were still going on quests. How do we let that fall out of practice?
I think people still go on quests.
Yeah, we just don't call them quests.
Right.
The quest for the Big Mac. It's just me going to McDonald's to get a Big Mac. Which, I don't know why I picked Big Mac, because I don't like Big Macs. So the goal of this game is to get to El Dorado.
The quest. El Dorado, yeah. If you will. Where the end goal is El Dorado.
Yes, indeed. So there are three spaces at the end of the map, and those three spaces correspond to El Dorado. So we're just trying to race across the map to get to El Dorado first. And along the way, we're going to use cards to hire new crew and move through the jungle to get there.
I'm assuming that means there's obstacles that will come up along the way.
Oh, there are obstacles.
Any good quest has obstacles.
Indeed. So every player is going to start with the same 8 cards. So each player is going to have their own individual deck. And then you're going to have a hand of 4 cards that you draw from that deck. Reading the rules, I noticed a lot of similarities to Dominion in just for that deck building aspect of it.
The only deck building game I am knowledgeable about, I feel like.
Subatomic, that one was also a deck builder. And I think
I've played it once.
Yes, we have played it once. Yeah. I don't know if we've played any other like actual deck builders. I feel like those are the only 2. So this will be the 3rd one. So on your turn, you are going to be able to use your 4 cards to play in order to do different things. So you can use your cards to move your expedition or buy new cards. So at the top of each card, there's going to be 3 different symbols with a number. So there's going to be machetes, boat oars, and gold coins. So the machetes are going to let you move through the jungle, the oars through water, and the gold's going to let you move through villages. And the number of symbols, each of the grid spaces has a number of symbols, and that tells you how much you have to spend, essentially, to get through one of those grid spaces. There's also a couple other spaces on the board. Some make you discard cards from your hand, and some make you discard cards completely from the game. And then in order to buy cards to add to your deck, you're going to, some of the cards have gold coins, so they're worth the amount of gold, and then everything else is worth 1/2 a gold. And that's what you're going to use to buy new cards from the market. And then once you're done playing all your cards, you're going to discard the cards that you played. If you still have cards from your hand, you can discard those or keep them. So that's the one big difference from Dominion, because usually you have to discard the rest of your hand at the end. This one, you can keep cards. And then you're going to draw back to 4. And that's the end of your turn. And then we're just going to keep going until someone gets to one of the finishing spaces. And that's it. It's the whole thing. I know you. Nobody listened. It's fine. I'll just explain it again like I always do.
Shall we play?
So we just finished a game of the Quest for El Dorado. To recap, I won. Kiwi is right behind me, and BP...
last place.
Yeah. She was building a house in one of the villages.
She wanted to put down roots.
It discard, was a pleasant discard, neighborhood. Discard.
So my strategy was to get a lot of money early on so I could buy a bunch of crew, I guess.
Yeah, my strategy was just look to see what was ahead and try to get cards that would help me get through that, and then choose a path for cards that I knew I had in my deck.
Yeah, I looked ahead to the end and I saw there was a lot of jungle area, so that's why I went for a lot of the high value machete guys to get through that really quick. That's why I jumped through the end pretty fast.
Yeah, because you were able to jump pretty far ahead on that last tile. Because my plan was, because I knew there was a route that you could go with singles, so like I was just gonna single my way around. And then I was close enough that had I had any card with an ore on it, I could have gotten into El Dorado on the very last turn, tied it, and then won the tiebreaker. So it was pretty close.
For you two.
Hey, you made it onto the last tile.
I did make it onto the last tile. I don't know. I think I started off just being, I need to move. And then I can move. And then I got to a point where I could not move anymore and got really frustrated because I couldn't move. And by then, all the lower valued cards were gone, so it took me a while to be able to buy cards that could get me to move again.
Yeah.
So I spent a couple turns just discarding my hand to try to get to cards that would help me move.
So what did you think of the theme?
I thought the theme was pretty... I thought it played well into how the game played. I think like a lot of things, you could have made it any theme, but I liked the theme and the way it worked with the mechanics. The mechanics and the theme went well together.
Yeah, it felt like a race, and you're kind of going through a jungle kind of environment. So there's a lot of good opportunity for those kind of cards to work in. So anything on the theme, BP?
I don't know what to say that you guys haven't already said.
Well, how about the art?
I think the art tied the theme into it, to the mechanics, and there you go.
Yeah. I thought the art was good. You know, when you were looking at the cards in between turns, like, they were nice to look at. But again, I think this is one of those games where, you know, the art isn't the primary thing. So you're not necessarily always paying attention to the art, but it's nice to have good art when you're not.
See, I thought it was a little dull. I think it could have definitely benefited from some more interesting artwork. It was nothing really fun to look at along the way, and you do spend some time looking at the cards.
That's fair. I don't think it's bad.
It's not bad. It's just a little dull, and I think this could have been a cool place to maybe play with some different art styles. So what did you think of the mechanics?
So this is where I was going to come in during the game, but then I didn't want to taint y'all's your view of the game. But I really liked the different take on the deck building. Because it definitely felt like the way it played, it played a lot like Dominion, but I liked the nice aspect of we not necessarily going after each other, which depending on the cards you have in Dominion, you can do that. But like, you were trying to do something very specific with the cards that you were playing. So I thought it was a cool take on like a variation on Dominion, essentially.
So you mean you like that you could get stuck trying to pass a certain obstacle?
Oh, I didn't get stuck, so I was totally fine. I think deck building is quickly becoming like one of my favorite. Like, it's not going to replace worker placement.
I was going to say,
worker placement is still going to be my favorite genre.
You need a worker placement with a card deck building.
Yeah,
Kiwi would love it.
Yeah, if there was, and we find one, I can basically stop because I will have found my game.
BP mechanics.
Mechanics are not my... I know you guys started this off saying, like, one day I'm going to know all about mechanics. I mean, they're okay. I don't dislike them. I mean, they don't get me... This one got me a little frustrated, but I think that's just because I got stuck. But they usually don't frustrate me, like, sometimes how certain rules get frustrating because of the wording on them. And I am a particular person about words having meaning. I think they were okay. I think it is unique that it was more than just a deck builder, so that was kind of cool. Because I do understand the deck building concept. It, you know, getting stuck wasn't fun, but at the same point, like, I didn't want to throw my cards across the table.
I think having a board was an interesting take on the deck builder concept compared to, say, Dominion. It kind of had an added element. It really helped sort of the race to the finish sort of feel to it. Instead of like building up victory points, you actually had a destination to get to. So I really like that aspect of it. I did think it was a little bit more simplistic. There weren't as many choices in cards. Mostly cards just sort of gave you more of that type, the machete or boatman. So there wasn't as quite as complexity, less like, you know, take that elements to it, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What did you think of the rules?
Yeah, the rules were easy to teach. And I think it helped that we were all familiar with Dominion. And the rules being so similar, I think it definitely helped teach it. I think this would be this is one of those games, like, I think Dominion, like, if you tried to teach it, and this one might be a little bit, but I feel like this would be like a good gateway game to get people into gaming, just because the rules are so easy. And I think that's why it was a Spiel des Jahres nominee, because it's, you know, there's not a lot of rules to the game, but there could be a lot of depth. Like, what do I put in my deck to get to where I need to go? And how do I get those cards?
So you're saying less rules doesn't mean it can still not provide thoughtful strategy.
Right.
Yeah, it works as a gateway game. It seems, since it's a little bit simpler than Dominion, and it's got kind of a board that people are more familiar with instead of a straight card game.
Yeah, and I think there's so many options with Dominion. Like, it also could depend on what 10 sets of cards you have out there. Whereas this game, like, it's very straightforward. Like, this is, you're trying to get from point A to point B, and your cards are the only way you can do it. So it's very, like, it gives people a, like, this is your goal. Where I feel like with Dominion, like, your goal is to get more points, but how you get there could be difficult to explain or get people to understand.
So, fun factor.
I really enjoyed it. I had fun. But I also didn't get stuck, so your mileage may vary.
So, even getting stuck, I don't think it was unfun. You know, I mean, again, that whole frustration meter, I think, indicates that it was still, you know, a rather enjoyable game.
Yeah, I got stuck a few times, but I guess I had enough money that I could just buy more cards.
Like any good one percenter, just buy your way out of trouble.
So would you play it again?
I would definitely play it again.
Wait, is this going to end up on our shelves?
No, I don't think it'll end up on our shelves, but
I mean, yeah, I'd play it again.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. I'd definitely play it again. I'm not sure I would get it, but I do kind of could use a deck builder in my collection.
Yeah, I was going to say, since we have Subatomic, like, I think that's the deck builder we'll keep. I don't think we need another deck builder. Now we just got to find that deck builder worker placement game.
Make it cooperative and you might entice me.
Oh, snap. A cooperative deck building worker placement game. I don't think you can have a co-op worker placement game.
Up next, we're going to be playing The Networks, designed by Gil Hova of Bad Medicine and Wordsy. The artist is Heiko Gunther of Burgle Bros, Can't Stop, and Glory to Rome, and Travis Kinchy. It is published by Formal Ferret Games. The description is, welcome to the TV business. You are the owner of a new television network. All you have are three awful public access shows, a small amount of cash, and endless ambition. Plus, it looks like you're not the only new TV network in town. Can you snatch up the best shows with the most popular stars and the most lucrative ads? Can you get enough shows in the same genre to make your network stand out? Can you utilize the powers of the handy network cards? Which network will get the most viewers and win the game? The mechanics are card drafting and set collection, and the box art looks like a bunch of little TV screens with cartoon images in it. So would you pick this up off the shelf based on this?
I would pick it up because it has Gil's name on it, and I've listened to him in so many podcasts at this point and listened to him talk about the networks that I really want to try it. I also remember the Kickstarter, seeing all the art. I like the cartoony style.
I'm excited to play just because it's Gil's game, but I don't know. I'm not as big of a fan as the cartoony style, but I'm interested. I will say, like, the network's concept isn't that appealing to me. It's kind of like that one that was like, you're a corporate executive. Like, nope. But I'm curious to see how it'll go.
Oh, see, because the theme about the idea of the networks and how they formulated back in history, I'm totally interested in.
Please tell us more.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, so networks of both television and radio. I mean, they developed radio first, and then networks developed off of radio networks, or TV networks. Anyway, they have their origins in the 1920s, and it's really interesting because U.S. networks developed very differently from their European counterparts. In Europe, governments very early on in the development of radio established networks to try to provide some kind of cultural standard, I guess would be the word.
BBC?
Yeah, like the BBC, for instance. And in fact, when television developed, speaking of the BBC,
early on, they were able to actually purchase U.S. programming much cheaper than they could develop their own. Obviously, in the early 2000s, that changed to where now many Americans are consuming BBC television shows.
It's got good shit on it.
It does have good stuff. But it's interesting because in the United States then, it was very early on, both in radio and then following in television, networks were developed by their advertisement base, so to speak. And so, for instance, if you listen to old-timey radio, and this would come about in early television as well, right? You have, for instance, like the Lux Radio Hour, Lux Soap being a big sponsor, if you will, of early radio shows, and then later, of course, into television. But what this meant was it was not the government or any other agency deciding what was on television, but sponsors.
All I caught out of that was Europe has standards and America doesn't.
That sounds like the most American thing ever.
Yeah. Except that America's standards are based on sponsorship and commercials and advertising. Yeah.
Basically the most American
thing.
I mean,
just think of the Super Bowl.
Like, we're going to base ours on culture. Yeah, we're going to just use ad money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So there you go. Now we can find where is the advertisement money in these networks.
There are ads in the game.
It's exciting.
All right. So the rules. The game is played over 5 seasons, and the seasons can be viewed as rounds. And during a season, players are going to go essentially around the table performing a single action. And you have 5-6 to choose from. And the season ends once all the players have performed the action drop-in budget, and then we score, and then you go into the next season. When the season ends, that's when you're going to gain viewers, you're going to get money for ads, and your shows are going to age, so you have to keep your lineup fresh as we progress through each of the seasons. 6 actions that we can do. You can develop a show, you can sign a star, you can land an ad, you can take a network card, you can attach a star or an ad to a show, and then you can drop in budget. So for develop a show, there's going to be a tableau, essentially, of shows out on the table, and you just pay the development cost, and then you get to take it, and then you can put it in one of your 3 time slots. And then whatever show is already in that time slot, you move it to your rerun section. For signing a star, you're basically doing the same thing. You pay the signing cost, and then you put that star in your green room. Landing an ad is the exact same, except for when you land an ad, you're going to take money. So essentially, it's the same as like the company paying you money to play their ad, and you're going to put that ad in your green room. You can take a network card. So network cards, they won't become available until the second season. And they essentially give you special abilities, and it all depends on when they get played. So some are immediate, some you maintain, and you activate the power and then you discard it. Some just affect the scoring at the end, and then others have powers that last throughout the game until you discard it. And then your 5th big action would be attach a star and add to a show. So some shows can have ads or stars attached to them. So your last big action is you can attach a star and add to a show. So you'll take a star and add from your green room, and you'll attach it to shows that are able to have ads or stars attached to them. And the last action, once you're done doing stuff, is you can drop and budget. So essentially that will end your season, and then you'll get a choice between whether you take money or take viewers. And then you wait until the other players finish their turn and also do the drop in budget. So at the end of the season, we're going to collect money from our ads. We're going to pay any upkeep. So TV shows and actors require upkeep. If you can't pay it with money, you have to pay it with viewers, so you'll lose viewers. Then you'll add all your viewers up and increase your score. You'll age all your shows, so there's counters on the cards, so you get less viewers as the shows progress in seasons.
Tell that to Game of Thrones in their final season.
Yeah, I mean, there are some shows, I saw some of the cards, where it will decrease and then increase again and then decrease. So they do, like, different shows will have different types of viewership. And then we'll basically set up for the new season, which mostly just involves dealing out new cards for us to choose from. So we're going to move all our reruns to the archive. We're going to discard any unused cards from the center of the table. We're going to draw new cards. We're going to determine turn order, which from season two on, it's basically whoever's in last place with the number of viewers gets to go first in the next turn. And then we'll move the season marker. And then after the fifth season, we do all that stuff. But then after we do that, we'll add up viewers again. So basically, season five, you'll get double the viewers. And then the player with the most viewers at the end wins the game. And ties goes to the player with the most money.
Let's play.
We just finished a game of the networks. To recap, Kiwi had 240 points, BP had 219, and I had 214. The strategy I had was, I guess, I played a lot of sci-fi early on, which was expensive, and then I was just trying to stay alive. I was leading until the very last round. How about you guys?
My strategy was...
Yes, your winning strategy.
Yeah, what
was
your winning strategy? Because it kind of feels like it just happened.
Although, I will say for our listeners that Eric and I, during play, the first time that Kiwi pulled a network card, we both said to each other, he's going to win.
Yeah.
And that network card that got me 14 points at the end of the game was that card.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know. I really had a strategy. It was mostly because I totally forgot about that card until the very end.
Oh my God, I hate you.
And then I had like every show I had had ads on it at the end. And then when you guys had dropped and budgeted, knowing that actors were one coin each or one viewer each, I just bought up all the actors that were left. It's like 7 million and only got me 3 viewers, but the money means nothing unless you tie.
Strategies that we should have used because I had, what, 20, 30 plus million dollars.
Oh, yeah. I thought the end of the game was going to be that I won and then you could have beaten me if you had spent more of that money to convert to viewers. But what happened was at the end of the last season, you then age everything and score again. And I don't think any of us realized that. And so all of my shows drop to like worthless, and that's really what cost me at the end. And that's where Kiwi just, because you got all those actors, I had done the math on the actors and the versus dropping and getting the 5 viewers, but you scored them twice, so you got double.
So even if you had used that last 20 million, you still would have ended up at 234.
Yeah, I think he just won because he had in that last round of scoring, he had the shows were, I don't know, I guess better. I don't know what you did. I really don't know what you did. I don't know how you won. You were in last by far the whole game, and then you just won.
Well, I think the other thing too is just you guys had typical shows Kiwi that were towards the end of their runs. So like Eric, you had shows that didn't get you a lot of viewers.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's what happened to me.
But I had replaced all mine because I had gotten mine earlier. And so I was higher up in where the shows were. Plus, I noticed that sports shows got you a lot of viewers in the first couple of seasons.
A lot of viewers, a lot of ads.
Yeah, and a lot of ads. So,
yeah.
It's a very typical American game.
Ads win.
Sports shows.
Yeah,
and ads
yeah,
win.
Yeah, sports shows on ads wins the game. Yeah, so I guess that was my strategy. BP?
I don't know that I really had a strategy. Just trying to continue to make money.
I think you did the best in keeping a genre. You had the 5 comedies.
Yeah, you were the only one that got the 5. Yeah.
I actually thought you played the best game overall. I thought I just had a strong start because sci-fi gave me so many viewers. But I was kind of worried you were going to catch up at the end because I thought overall you were playing better. I thought Kiwi was doing terrible. So
yeah, so did I.
Oh, no, I knew Kiwi all along was going to come up from behind.
Well, I knew he would win. I just thought he was playing terrible. So, okay. So what do we think about the theme?
So I actually want you to start with theme, because you, at the very beginning of the whole episode, you were the one that said that you weren't super
keen. And by
keen.
You, he means me.
No, Eric.
Oh, Eric.
Yeah, because
oh,
okay. you said you were excited about it.
Right.
Because, yeah.
And but Eric said that
he wasn't. I was iffy because...
Okay, yeah, then go, Eric.
Overall, I actually liked it because I liked how the shows were all a play on real shows. So that's just kind of a fun side game to do, is figuring them out.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that piece of it. Running the network wasn't as bad as I like thought. It wasn't too corporate-y. You're still trying to like kind of piece it all together.
Yep.
I don't know. I liked it, I think. I don't know if it'd be my favorite theme, but it definitely was better than kind of if you told me, oh, it's a game about TV executives. I liked it more than I thought I would.
Yeah, I thought the theme, like the theme and the mechanics went really, really well together. Like I can't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I can't think of another. Like, I think with the other games that we've played in the past, we've all been like, oh, well, this could have been a game about Kentucky Derby with Camel Cup.
Yep. Or
we could have put a ton of other themes on this and made it like right now sitting here. I cannot think of another theme that would fit with the way this game played.
Yeah, it fit really well.
I was interested before. I was interested throughout it. Obviously, I continued with my historical ad thing because I was really focused throughout the play of making sure I always had ads.
Yeah.
And money.
Money. I'm very American.
Do you think it gave a good feel of like running a TV network?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, neither do I.
I think it gives, like, because you always hear people talk about like, oh, you know, it didn't do as well in the 9 o'clock slot, but when they moved it into the 6 o'clock slot, like it, you know, improved vastly.
Yeah. I do kind of wish you could do that. Like you could, cause you kind of just looked at the slot it was supposed to be in and put it in, but it'd be kind of fun if like you could tweak them. I don't know. I don't know how you'd add that in, but I think that would be interesting.
Well, I think cause you had pointed out like it would have been cool if you could have replaced actors or actresses. And I think yep. shifting around the time slots, like I think it, yeah, you're right. It would have been cool. Like, oh, hey, we're in the, you know, the fourth season and we brought on so-and-so and it boosted the ratings.
Right, yeah.
Or
yep,
we moved it from a 9 o'clock slot to a 6 o'clock slot and we boosted the ratings. And maybe it gives you like a small boost, but maybe it costs you something to do that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, other than an action, maybe just it costs you an action, right?
Yeah, no, I don't know how that kind of would have affected everything else because it is kind of already like it's, I guess we could talk about it with mechanics and stuff, but, it may have added a little too much to the game if they added all that in.
Sure.
All right. How about the art?
I thought the art really fit with like the titles, the names. Like we had 31 rock or 31 paper, which is like 30 rock, and they were playing rock, paper, scissors in the
yep.
in the thing. I thought the art fit with the whimsical, like satirical style that it was doing.
Great.
Yeah, I think the cartoony type art is not my favorite, but I think it fit really well with this because it kind of gave it less, like I was saying, it could have come off too serious as like a network game, but
it was less gravitas, more comedic.
Yeah.
So I think it worked. I want to go back to the box art actually real quick. I really like this box art, how it, like if you notice how the name of the game and then like a game by Gilhova and the formal ferret logo is all sort of blended in with the kind of the other scenes. I think that was really clever.
I see now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. So I think the art worked well for the game. All right. What about the mechanics? BP?
Because mechanics mean nothing to me. I mean, they were fine. It was new and different. I feel like there was it deck building?
No, I think they list this as.
Yeah, what do they call them? I don't even know, kind of really know what the mechanics.
Card drafting. So, yeah, for sure we were doing that. And set collection, which with the 3 and 5 genre bonuses.
I don't know that those listed. I don't know. But it seemed to be something new and different to a certain extent. Like, had a lot of different options every single turn.
Yeah.
There's your non-technical response.
Yeah,
what did I say earlier? Is like there's kind of a lot going on, but it feels very smooth and fluid. Like it wasn't too much. I didn't feel like you had to overanalyze. I was a little bit worried because Gil is kind of seems like an analytical type from the podcast he's on. So I was worried it might be a little bit too heavy, but it kind of really, it flowed really well. there's a lot to think about, but it wasn't like, oh God, I too many choices. I can't do anything. Maybe there were a couple times, I think.
Yeah, I think the couple times were kind of later in the game when it was more like, all right, I know what's going on and I know I have an end state. So like, what do I need? Oh, and then so-and-so just took the thing that I needed. And so now what do I need to do to change it? But I thought the mechanics, like I said earlier, like the mechanics and the theme go super well together. So I liked it.
What about player interaction then? That's something that Eric is always really big on.
Yeah, there wasn't too much of that, but I felt like there wasn't necessarily a lot of direct interaction in terms of gameplay, but I think we were all very involved in what we were doing, so it wasn't like, I didn't check out on your guys' turn.
Right.
Yeah.
They went fast enough.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
stuff I did on my turn, like, sort of affected other people, like if I took the card that you wanted, but I think overall, like, it was interesting enough that you were in... that you wanted to see what people were doing. And the turns were so short that you couldn't really get up and walk away and pay attention.
I was definitely, yeah, like a little bit of, oh, is he going to grab my card? Or, you know, what's BP doing over there? But for the most part, I was just kind of curious, like watching what we were all doing. And I don't know, it felt interactive without necessarily being the gameplay that interactive.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool. I really liked how the cards kind of had that flipping thing. So you know, it was a good use of card in terms of graphic design, but also just sort of strategy. It was like, okay, you take this card, and if this event happens, then it's flipped for max value. Otherwise, it's not worthless, like, but you're still trying to get it maxed out.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that kind of part of the gameplay. So what about the rules?
I feel like I did a lot of explaining, at least when we talked, like did the overview of the rules. But I think once you describe the actions and there's like the little nuances, like hey, to make a show, like you got to make sure you have the prereqs before you take it, which bit me in the ass on the one because I read it wrong.
Yep.
But I thought overall, like it was a lot of rules in the beginning, but they were simple enough that, you know, once we made it through a round, and I think we did all the actions in that first season. And then after that, it was easy, I thought.
I'd say for the most part, it was straightforward. We did have to go back to the rule book a handful of times. I think any game that has a lot of kind of iconography tends to have that happen.
Yeah.
We saw it wasn't as bad as Seven Wonders Duel, but it was still a good bit of going back to the book. So I don't know, maybe like one of those card, like a spot on the board that has sort of icon meanings.
Yeah, like the player boards themselves did have like the turn order and the options that you had. And I think in one of the expansions he did, he has a bigger player aid as well that helps you out a little bit more.
Yeah. I think that would help. Yeah, and I liked how there were, you kind of do all the actions pretty frequently. A lot of games have like, here's your six actions, and you do like two of them 90% of the time.
Yeah.
And you kind of forget about the other ones, but this one, it kind of felt like you did a little of everything, which is nice variation.
Yeah. I thought everybody was kind of all over the place in terms of what actions they were taking, like not in a bad way all over the place, but it was just like, okay, I've done this thing and now I need to do this thing. And okay, now that because I did those two, I can do this thing. You kind of set yourself up.
Fun factor.
Why are you looking at me?
I don't know. I always look at you.
Because I'm good looking.
Hey.
I thought it was fun. It was enjoyable. I was interested in the theme. Kept me engaged. It wasn't complicated. There was no frustration factor.
I thought it was great. This has been like the one game that I've been looking forward to. There's a couple others that we have on the docket. But this is the one that I've been looking forward to the most because I've really wanted to play it. Especially after listening to Gil on a couple of podcasts. So finally getting to play it, like it's as fun as I had hoped it would be. And I really enjoyed it.
So for me, the fun factor actually kind of is where I really enjoyed the game and all the gameplay, but with you coming behind and winning at the end, just randomly kind of soured it for me. Like I thought, you know, I had a good start. BP had a good strategy. And then you just came out of nowhere and beat us by a pretty good margin, which kind of just sort of, I would like to play it again to see if that continuously happens, or if it was just sort of a fluke, or but that was kind of disappointing ending to me.
See, I thought it was great because I was the one coming from behind. Right, but I wonder if some of that is just because of the catch-up mechanic that he has built into the game. Since
I don't think it was a catch-up, though. You didn't even know it was happening until it happened.
Oh, the 240. Yeah, I think the last season I kind of did recognize, like, because I remembered that card finally that gave me more viewers with the ads. And so then I was trying to get ads, but it was already too late to get shows. So it was kind of... But yeah, I mean, I hope that doesn't happen every time, but...
Kiwi always wins. I don't know why this is like...
You won El Dorado.
I won once.
No, you won five tribes.
I won five tribes.
I won El Dorado. So I've won two. BP's won one. You've won like 15.
That's not true. We're going to go back and we're going to look. I was also going to point out that he's got a couple of expansions. So one of them adds...
Which I'm interested in. Those sound fun.
Yeah. So one of them is it adds executives to the game. And the executives, like, they have a really good power. But then they also have, like, a drawback.
Is sexual harassment one of them?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, probably not.
That's good.
But, like, they let you do things that generally you can't do. But then, like, the drawback may be, like, you can't attach ads to shows.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, like, and the executives you get, it's like, I'll give you three cards, you choose one, and that's the executive you get. But then they'll also give you, I think it gives you, like, bonus points at the end, too, if you do things that the executive likes.
What's the on-air one?
On-air, it's basically the Kickstarter exclusive, so it just gives you a couple extra things. So there's a couple extra shows in there. And then Teletime is the other big one, and basically it replaces all the TV shows with funny titled ones from British.
Oh.
Yeah, but it replaces all the cards, all the show cards with the British ones. And that's all it does.
Which automatically makes the game a little better.
Yeah, right.
I did really enjoy the name, like Dr. What, and what was the NCIS OMG?
Like, it was OMG, OMG, OMG.
Yeah, it was like 14 characters long. That was good.
All right, so finally, would you play it again?
Absolutely.
Sure. I'd even suggest it if, like, it was on a shelf and there, depending on the other options.
Yeah.
Yeah, this ranks pretty high for me. I would like to play it again where Kiwi doesn't win.
You mean where BP wins?
Yeah.
Pretty much anybody. I don't care.
I'll let you win this right after one of us gets to win Cat Lady.
That's never going to happen.
Yeah, well, there you go.
If you have any comments, suggestions, etc., please find us on Twitter or Instagram. We're at First Turncast, FirstTurnCast, or you can email us at firstturntabletop@gmail.com. Again, we look forward to any comments, questions, recommendations, and also feel free to rate us on your favorite podcast app. Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, she's moving in.
Apparently I don't have the right cards.
It's called homesteading. She's a squatter. Yeah, I did want to point out that Eric said on a scale of 1 to 10, and you said mild.
Mm-hmm. What? It's a descriptive?
Yeah, but mild's not... The scale was 1 to 10. Mild is not a number. So you just attach one or the other to the show, and then you can... The fucking cat just, like, walked in, meowed, walked around, and then walked out. Like, hey, what are you guys doing? Recording a podcast? Have fun with this, fuckers.
There's camels in Arizona.